Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that thinks that reality is an overrated concept. That is at least partly why the three of us indulge so much time in the dark watching images splash across a movie screen. We saw a pair of films that play with the notion of reality this past week, beginning with Swedish filmmaker Roy Anderson's latest exploration of existence titled About Endlessness. We also watched a British import titled Limbo and the U.S. independent film Together Together. Let's begin this week's show by discussing the latest intriguing study by the director of the 2000 film Songs from the Second Floor. Like that film, 2007's You the Living and 2014's A Pigeon Sat on a Branch Reflecting on Existence, the films of Roy Anderson are unlike anything else you're likely to see outside of maybe an art museum. That's because Anderson, now at 78 years of age, doesn't make movies that fit any sense of the mainstream. Instead, they are meditations on existence itself, unfolding like landscape paintings with bizarrely mundane, sometimes surrealistic, but always muted imagery, suggesting scenarios that feel both familiar and strange at once. About Endlessness is his latest effort, a 77-minute exercise in what more than a few viewers are likely to describe as hopelessness and despair. Similar to Anderson's other films, this one is structured as a series of set pieces. A guy walking up a set of stairs carrying groceries, a man crying on a crowded bus, a woman we are told who feels no shame staring out a window, a disgruntled dentist walking out on a patient, a priest who has lost his faith, a man who stuffs his savings under his mattress, a young couple talking about the essence of energy, and so on. The connecting device is a woman's voice telling us of all these very people whom she has seen. Slow to develop and missing the slight bits of humor that I, maybe mistakenly, saw in Anderson's previous films, About Endlessness seems to be saying that life might not amount to much, but we might as well get along as well as we can in the short time that we have.
Yeah, I think you did a good job, Dan, describing this movie, which is very difficult to describe. And I mean, I think Anderson's style in general is kind of difficult to describe. I mean, the only other movies that I would compare them to are his other movies. Like, nobody else really makes movies quite like this. I mean, he does have that sense of surrealism. There's kind of a maybe an influence of like Dadaism in his work, because you get these sequences that might relate to one another, might not. There might be a running theme, or maybe this is just kind of a random assemblage of ideas and images and characters that he kind of came up with. And in this sense, I mean, the title About Endlessness both feels like sort of the Rosetta Stone for this movie, but it also kind of feels like a misnomer as well, because I'm not really sure what this movie is about. And I'm not even sure what he means by endlessness.
It'd almost be ironic, of course.
In a way, yeah. And there's this recurring image throughout the movie of this man and woman that are embracing, and they're sort of floating above this city that looks like it's been bombed out in a nuclear war or something like that. And I started to wonder, okay, are they sort of like God figures that are witnessing all of these people? Because as you said, there's this voice that's kind of saying, this woman did this, this man did this. And I thought, are these the people that are floating above? Are they controlling the people below? Are they simply just kind of, you know, wry observers? You just have all these questions, and then the movie ends and you never really get any answers. But I think that within the work of Roy Anderson, I mean, I just really respond to the way that he makes movies, to his kind of, I think it's funny too. He has this sense of humor that's so dark and despairing that you kind of have to laugh. Like, I reviewed this for the radio station, and I compared him to Gary Larson, the guy that writes The Far Side. His movies kind of have that same sense of irony and sort of, you know, weird human nature. And I mean, this movie is no different. And I think there are more moments of hope and curiosity and joy in this than maybe some of his other movies, even though the majority of the images in About Endlessness are depressing and violent. I mean, we even get a cameo from Hitler at one point. There's a guy begging for his life in front of a firing squad. We see these soldiers marching off.
So those are the upbeat humorous moments that you're talking about?
Yes, that I was getting to the upbeat humorous moments, but we see, you know, soldiers marching off to POW camps. But then there's a moment where these three young women are walking past an open air cafe and they just start dancing spontaneously. And you mentioned the, I'm guessing they're college age kids that are talking about, you know, the nature of energy and matter and how matter can't be destroyed. And I think that's probably the endlessness that the title is talking about. So there are moments in here that, that do feel, you know, somewhat optimistic, but they're always kind of brought back down again by the next, the next sketch or scene, however you want to call them. That kind of, it's almost like a splash of cold water in the face. But yeah, I feel like this guy's movies, I mean, they all kind of are of a piece. They all sort of look the same and move the same. If you don't respond to them, if you don't like one, you're not going to like the other ones. No, you know what I mean? No. Like
the flip side of that is true also. If you like one, you'll probably like all four.
Yeah. The only thing is that I do feel like I've seen this movie already. I don't think he's bringing us anything new necessarily, but if he wants to keep making a new movie every 5 years or so, I mean, I think we're all going to be there to see it regardless of what it's about. And I'm still not really sure what this one is about, even though the title purports to tell you what it's about.
I believe that you have to look at his films through a different lens, and that's the lens of art, because you said it doesn't, these movies don't resemble anything but one another. And his work reminds me of Bill Viola, who does who does these art installation pieces, you know, that are typically shown in museums or other venues and so forth. And that's what this feels like. And when after we watched this particular film, I was
about endlessness.
Yeah, about endlessness. I wanted to know a little bit more about Roy Anderson. And so there was a documentary, a British documentary, that was made about him while About Endlessness was being made. And so I thought, oh, well, that'll be a great backstory. Unfortunately, it's UK accessible only at this point, so we couldn't get a lot of information, but we did stumble upon another short doc that was probably 15 minutes long that sort of talked about his influences. And of course, they were all artists. So if you look at Edward Hopper, for example, or Peter
Bruegel the Elder,
right. Those were his influences, these sort of rich paintings. And I would compare those two artists very differently, because Hopper's are almost more stark, and Bruegel's always have these huge set pieces, and you're sort of looking at all of the different happenings that are going on.
And they're also 500 years apart. So,
well, yes, there's that too. But I think that as a reference point is a good one for About Endlessness and Anderson's work, because it really, and this short doc also presented information about how he makes movies. And I did not realize that he creates all of these sets. So these are not filmed in actual locations. They are actually filmed in a studio, and he has created all
with green screens. Yes,
right.
Exactly.
And so that in and of itself explains why his films take 5 or 6 years to create or to publish. So I think that information was at least helpful to me to understand what was going on. The other sort of intriguing aspect of this was, you know, you mentioned, Nathan, that he's 78 years old. Before this film ended, he actually had to go into rehab because his alcohol abuse had gotten so bad. His substance abuse disorder had gotten so bad that he packed himself off to rehab. And so that was sort of an intriguing or interesting feature. About people's ability to create art despite some other seeming challenges that they might be facing.
Or is that the impetus for why they do it? We can't stop our discussion of About Endlessness without pointing out that the 2000 film Songs from the Second Floor played at the Spokane International Film Festival. It's the first time I ever even heard of Roy Anderson. And so we have to thank the late film critic Bob Glatzer for bringing that to Spokane and for beginning our whole appreciation of this very bizarre, very unique, very strange, but innovating filmmaker.
And I think the good news, you know, so we've been critical with some justification about our being compelled to see things on the small screen rather than in the theater. Although this week we are talking about two films in the second half that are screening in the theater. But I think this particular film would definitely benefit by being seen on the big screen.
Oh, yes.
Except if you watch it on the television, you know, maybe you would be inclined to go and watch it again just to make sure that you've sort of seen everything you wanted or needed to see. I know, Nathan, you're certainly not opposed to going to the theater multiple times when you've seen something that pops for you. But yeah, this is art. This is really not film, in my opinion. And I think that if people can appreciate it, maybe on both levels, that would be great.
Well, I think it's film. I don't think it's movie in that sense.
Okay. Well, can it be all of them at once?
Yeah, right.
Let's talk about energy.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was our discussion about the Swedish film About Endlessness. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Limbo and Together Together. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Swedish film About Endlessness. Let's now move to Limbo and Together Together. Continuing our look at films that explore an alternative reality, let's begin with a look at a Syrian man's struggle to maintain his sanity in a moderately insane setting. One of the stories that is splashed regularly across news reports involves immigration, both here in the U.S. and around the world. Some of those stories delve into the experience of the immigrants themselves, though few do so in the curious manner demonstrated by British filmmaker Bin Sharik in his second feature film titled Limbo. Writer-director Sharik tells the story of Omar, a Syrian refugee who was waiting in a holding center to hear word on his U.K. asylum request. We don't know how he arrived at the center, but we do know that the place in which he, along with a couple of dozen other refugees from various countries, are being held is located on a remote, barren, windswept Scottish island. We also know that Omar carries his father's oud, a guitar-type stringed instrument, wherever he goes, but that he abstains from playing it. Rather than going into specifics about Omar's situation or even about the plight of refugees in general, Sharik instead explores the aimlessness of the immigrant experience by employing a deliberate, exaggerated style, both visually, a scene may include for no real reason a person riding by in a motorized wheelchair, and thematically. One character, an Afghan man, steals a chicken and names it Freddie Jr. after his hero, the late singer Freddie Mercury. Limbo may not add anything comprehensive to the immigration argument, but it does capture the desperation, undercut by the occasional darkly comic interlude of those caught up in its machinations.
You're correct, Dan, that this is not your typical sort of movie about refugees or immigrants. At the same time, it captures so much of that experience, and it's sort of writ large by the barren landscape in which these people find themselves. And I'm talking about the locals as well as the people who are awaiting placement in other locales in the UK. And so I think that the barren landscape that some of us might be familiar with from the police procedurals, hinterland, and things such as that are really another character here, because it is so dependent on this sort of isolation factor, because that shows the sort of emotional state in which, you know, people are operating. This was a tough sort of path to navigate, I think, because it is a film that includes humor. So when we talk about limbo, it is characterizing that state betwixt and between. But the filmmaker is able to sort of capture some of the humorous aspects. And the thing, of course, that pops right away is all of these immigrants, and I would say there's probably about 20 of them who are living in this house from different locales, mostly from sub-Saharan Africa and from the Middle East. They go to these sort of cultural immersion classes. And I could, I mean, Dan, you taught ESL and citizenship classes for several years to the refugee and immigrant population in Spokane. And as a result of refugee workshops put on by my colleague, Professor Megan Ballard, I had that experience to be involved in these things talking about law-related activities. But the first cultural immersion class that we see these people go to is one that is trying to help these, and it's a group of men, so 20 men, differentiate between what it means to interact with women in the UK who they might meet in cafes or bars or something like that. And it involves this couple who are teaching the class and they are dancing in this sort of very sexualized yet awkward way. And these guys are just sitting there trying to figure out what's going on, as frankly are we. And so I think it had these sort of snippets of reality. It had this these relationships among the asylees. It also, and I thought this was handled really well, Omar speaks periodically to his mother, who's back in Syria. And
she and her husband Istanbul.
Yeah, they're in Istanbul. His brother is in Syria fighting
the civil war.
So he is a member of the insurgency fighting against the government. And so they have these conversations that are sort of contrasting the two brothers' paths that were taken. And Omar feels guilty and he feels relieved and he feels privileged and, you know, all of these things. And it's captured in these very brief phone calls. So I really give the filmmaker a lot of credit. I mean, this is not a Boys in the Band movie that we saw, but it has some of those same sensibilities. It also has some of the same features Limbo does to some of the sort of quirky Scottish village comedies, sort of films that we've seen in other contexts. But I really did enjoy and appreciate this film.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Limbo is that particularly today, we're so sensitive to stereotypes. And this movie, Limbo, is filled with stereotypes, but it never uses the stereotypes in a way that makes us laugh at people or we're laughing with them. We're laughing at the situation. We're not making fun of people. At least I didn't feel that way. It's all played for comedy that undercuts a very serious issue.
Well, and Omar, as a musician, you know, we're waiting. He's carrying this instrument around throughout the entire movie and he doesn't play it. And we're like trying to figure out, is this a MacGuffin? Like, what's going on? And finally, we sort of understand what had to happen for him to sort of regain his interest in playing music and connecting with his homeland while being far away.
Right. We keep getting flashbacks that are his memories of being in Syria before the civil war occurred. And so that gives us a vestige, at least, of what his experience is and what he's missing. But at any rate, that was Limbo. Let's close with Together, Together. If you're a fan of the standard romantic comedy, you know the tropes. Couple meets, often cute, finds mutual attraction, encounters problems, overcomes them, and then resolves everything with a kiss. Writer-director Nicole Beckwith wanted to do something different. Her movie features a 26-year-old woman, Anna, played by Patty Harrison, who agrees to be the surrogate mother of a 45-year-old man, Matt, played by Ed Helms. We watch as the two meet, not particularly cute, agree on the surrogacy, slowly get to know one another, and head toward what we all know is traditional territory. Whether they get there is the big question. Along the way, Beckwith addresses several other queries. Are age differences really important when it comes to love? What are the personal stories that bring each character to this point in their lives? Can a man and woman really be best friends without sex ever becoming an issue? Is watching the entire series of the sitcom Friends a workable bonding experience? Together Together may not answer every question it poses, but Harrison and Helms follow Beckwith's lead and give us something different and in the end, refreshingly original.
Yeah, I saw this movie at Sundance, and so I expected it to go in very predictably Sundance-y territory. I thought for sure that Ed Helms would start having doubts about becoming a father, that that his family was going to reject the Patty Harrison character as his surrogate, that they would fall in love, you know, lather, rinse, repeat. And the movie doesn't do that. It sidesteps all those cliches. I mean, I don't think it reinvents the wheel in any way. And of course, that whole idea of can men and women be friends? I mean, that's been explored since When Harry Met Sally and even before that. But I thought that as sort of like a platonic rom-com, as I've seen this described, I thought it was really charming and often quite funny. Helms and Harrison have terrific chemistry together. We believe their relationship. And then the cast has all of these kind of comic ringers in it. Like you have Nora Dunn and Fred Melamed, and Tig Notaro shows up, and Anna Conkle from the Hulu show Pen 15 is in there, and they all have some good lines. So yeah, this was a surprise to me. I thought for sure I knew where it was going. I thought for sure I knew how I was going to feel about it. And then it subverted a lot of my expectations. So yeah, I liked this quite a bit.
Yeah, we should say that Together Together and Limbo are playing only in the theaters right now. And so we took Frances McDormand's Oscar shout out to heart. Go back to the theater and see things on the big screen. And I'm not sure that you would need to see this particular film on the big screen, but it was refreshing to do so. And yeah, I agree with you, Nathan. I loved the different characters that show up and the pacing of this movie. You're right, Nathan. You keep waiting for some big moment or some big reveal or something to happen. And it doesn't really play out that way. You know, there are moments of excitement and heightened, you know, awareness and sweetness and so forth. But yeah, I thought it was well worth watching because it broke some of those expectations that we might have, the tension that we have in settings such as this with a male and female lead.
Yeah, and we have to add here that Patty Harrison is a very interesting newcomer on the scene. Some people will be very familiar with her. If you aren't, go to YouTube and check out some Jimmy Fallon episodes and you'll learn all about her. She's really terrific in this film. And that was Together Together, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed About Endlessness and Limbo. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the writer Aaron Entrada Kelly's novel, The Land of Forgotten Girls. The closet is a closet, but it's also a rocket or a treehouse. Your mind is a palace as long as you go in the right rooms. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.